Welcome to the Sports Pro Podcast, getting inside the sports industry and recording it on audio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another Sports Pro Podcast. My name is Owen Connolly. I'm the editor at large at Sports Pro. Great to have you back with us for 2019 as we resume our weekly podcast activities. And delighted to have back with me once again, Sports Pro print editor Mike Long. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Owen. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Mike. I'm good. We are here for our first cross-channel Sports Pro podcast recording. Brexit be damned. I am here in Paris, and you are there in Manchester. Hearing you pretty well, even though we've had our share of technical difficulties this week. I hope nobody's enjoyment is spoiled in audio terms. But yeah, how was your Christmas, Mike, and your New Year?
It was lovely, thanks, Owen. Very festive, very relaxing. Had a lovely trip to Switzerland, so cannot complain. How was yours?
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. Family and friends and, yeah, relaxation and all the rest of it. All the good stuff. The sports industry kind of slows down over Christmas. I mean, sport doesn't slow down. Tons of big events and sporting action to follow. The sports industry slows down a little bit, but there have been some pretty big developments in the last few weeks, the biggest of which probably is the thing that isn't happening. Susanna Dinic, who had been announced as the incoming chief executive of the Premier League, I think she was meant to be starting round about now, it emerged literally late evening on the last Sunday of 2018 that she would not, in fact, be taking up that post. She will be staying on as president of Animal Planet. From what we can ascertain, it's just a change of heart. It's, I suppose, sometimes when you're talking about business decisions and so on, the kind of human element gets forgotten. But yeah, she just seems to have changed her mind about it.
Yeah, and interesting that they, I know you mentioned that the start date was around about now, but no date, specific date had been set. And there was still some uncertainty, I suppose, in that regard, as to when and if she would start. As you say, a change of heart, seemingly. Perhaps she's been reading about all of the challenges she may face when she arrives in the role, and perhaps that put her off. Who knows? But if we didn't see her appointment coming, we certainly didn't see her U-turn coming either. So who's going to step in to replace her?
It's difficult, really, to get a sense of who would come in, whether they will go for another media figure or whether they go for somebody with more of a football background. Obviously, there are significant football challenges to resolve as far as the Premier League is concerned, or at least football community challenges with the kind of conflicting interests of the leading clubs and the rest. There's also the problem of Brexit to resolve, which might take a different skill set in the short term. But the names that have been circulated in the British media: Tim Davie, who's the chief executive of BBC Studios, who's believed to have been on the initial shortlist, and then Tom Betts from ITV. So very much people in that kind of media realm. But yeah, not much really that we can say about it, but it's one to watch for sure in 2019, and kind of puts a different spin on the Premier League story for the rest of, or for the next couple of months anyway. Other stories to emerge: the NFL heading into its playoffs, signing its first sports betting deal, or it's a casino deal.
Yes, crucially not sports betting. Crucially doesn't include any rights to sports betting, just a casino partner. Worth around $30 million a year, according to Bloomberg, and obviously comes on the heels of the NBA and MLB signing similar deals with MGM last year. Yeah, this is the direction of travel now, isn't it, Owen? This the casino deals, and sports betting deals are going to be coming increasingly lucrative, surely, as the months go on.
I think so. I mean, what's interesting is, yeah, it's quite a conservative move from the NFL. They haven't kind of included some of the betting elements or some of the other branding elements that the NBA and other major leagues have so far. So it's kind of a foot in the door, but also a sign that, you know, the US betting market is going to develop differently, and the kind of commercial side of that is going to develop differently, because it's a unique set of conditions. Some other bits, and this is very much a kind of mop up before we get into our interview with George Pine from Bruin Sports Capital in the second part of today's podcast. But 11 Sports, who we've heard a lot about in 2018, their kind of speculative entry into the UK market. It looks like it's heading into a bit of a retreat. Obviously, there was some talk about rights holders moving away from deals to UFC, most significantly re-signing with BT Sport towards the back end of last year. Some uncertainty as to where 11 goes in the UK, and specifically the UK, where, you know, it's a smaller operation. For all that it was quite eye-catching, it's a smaller operation than it is in some other markets. But yeah, withdrawing their annual pass subscription, at the very least for the time being.
Yeah, of course. And as you say, considerable speculation about whether they'll close their UK operation altogether, only offering monthly subscriptions at the moment. Obviously, seeing how things play out, I suppose, difficult to know what the company's future is in the UK after, as you say, it's forced to kind of relinquish its UFC rights back to BT. Obviously made a big splash kind of snaring the legal rights from Sky. Yeah, we'll all be watching closely, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's something that we're going to have to get used to in the OTT era as well, is these kind of more exploratory approaches to markets and to products and everything else. And, you know, perhaps it won't always be as dramatic as this appears to be for 11, but, you know, they've come here, they've kind of tested the boundaries of the 3 p.m. Saturday blackout. They've taken this sort of iterative, move fast, break things approach, and, you know, it looks like they might now retreat. And I would be surprised if this was kind of the last of these kind of episodes that you get, as kind of people try and work the space out and try and work out, you know, what conditions are and what's going to work financially.
I think it comes down to market conditions, market dynamics as well. Obviously, they they were looking to kind of challenge the status quo in the UK and bring their own model to it. Obviously, OTT is their bread and butter, but ultimately this boiled down to pay TV distribution. And they coming into the market and having to deal with the likes of Sky and BT and Virgin, and not ultimately being able to get a carriage deal over the line has kind of hit them harder than perhaps they expected, even though they had, they were very confident, the executives at 11, that they would get a deal done. Do they now scale back and retreat to just OTT? We understand that they're renegotiating their broadcast deals that they have with the likes of Serie A and La Liga, to retain digital rights and to continue operating as a digital only kind of streaming service. But whether that happens remains to be seen. So certainly one to watch.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of markets, it's going to be really, really difficult to operate as a pure OTT player for a little while yet. You know, without being willing to front up some pretty big investment. Speaking of investment. CVC Capital, we're all over the map here, but some of their plans or some of the ideas that they have for Premiership Rugby here in the UK leaked to the press at the weekend as we're speaking. And I mean, it's quite aggressive stuff. It's kind of, you know, potentially closing off that league, having no promotion or relegation in the top flight of English Rugby Union, which would be a first. English Rugby Union has kind of operated more in the football model of traditional promotion and relegation. And perhaps most tellingly, given where lots of leagues are going to be going this season, I think, looking at globalising, looking at more games in places like South Africa and the USA. And I think the other thing, Mike, is who holds the power in terms of how some of these leagues operate? Whether it's going to be traditional rights holders or organising bodies, or whether it's going to be commercial entities, is going to be very interesting. You know, we look elsewhere in sport at something like swimming with the International Swimming League, which is a kind of, you know, super governing body competition that's kind of arisen as a challenge to FINA. And I just feel like that's going to be another one of the themes that we'll see developing in the year ahead.
Yeah, I think so. And I know we spoke about it towards the end of last year, you know, as kind of the talk within football in particular, also, as you mentioned, swimming and snooker as well, and indeed rugby. This talk of breakaway leagues, breakaway entities emerging to kind of challenge the traditional kind of sanctioning bodies or organising bodies. I certainly think it's going to be a theme of 2019 and beyond. Ultimately, where does the power lie in individual sports? Each sport has their own kind of dynamics, but ultimately it comes down, I suppose, to player power somewhat, but certainly in individual sports and in team sports, the teams and clubs themselves, if they can kind of unify and rally behind a kind of breakaway proposal, then it's a very serious threat to some of those established entities.
So yeah, a lot to keep an eye on. We will, I'm sure, return to some of these topics in a slightly less whistle-stop fashion in the weeks and months ahead. But that'll do for part one. Join us again in part two when we will be speaking to, or you will be speaking to, Mike, George Pine, the founder of Bruin Sports Capital. Back in a sec. Welcome back to the Sports Pro Podcast. Michael, in the latest issue of Sports Pro Magazine and indeed on sportspromedia.com this week, we have been going inside Bruin Sports Capital. What can you tell us about that?
We have indeed, Owen, and Bruin Sports Capital, in case listeners aren't aware, is the sports investment vehicle set up about almost exactly 4 years ago by former NASCAR and IMG Sports and Entertainment executive George Pine. It's his first kind of venture into private equity. We profiled the business, as you say. It was in issue 103, the final issue of Sports Pro 2018. We're also running a series this week online at sportspromedia.com, looking at the business, profiling the business and George Pine himself, also some of its portfolio companies, including On Location Experiences, which is the kind of started life a few years ago as the VIP hospitality business of the NFL, since branched out into other sports, other sectors, including music and entertainment. There's Delta Tray, who is obviously a well-known name within the sports industry as one of the leading sports media and technology providers. Another of their portfolio companies, Engine Shop, has been making some interesting moves of late, certainly last year, acquiring kind of Terence Burns's fledgling sports consultancy, along with a couple of esports agencies and also IEG, the sponsorship evaluation business over in the US. A couple of other businesses that under the Bruin portfolio as well, SoulSight and Courtside Ventures, a strategic branding specialist and early stage venture capital fund, respectively. We've spoken to a load of names that are operating within the Bruin kind of fold, if you like, and obviously George Pine is the man leading it all. So do take some time to check out the coverage online and stay tuned for my conversation with George shortly.
Yeah, you spoke to George at Sportel, I believe, in Monaco.
Did, yes.
Towards the end of last year. Let's join you and George at breakfast in Monte Carlo.
A little jaded from jet lag and a little jaded from Sportel festivities the previous night, so I do apologise to listeners for that.
Well, let's take a listen.
If I analyse myself, I go back and think about, obviously, the things I didn't do well, but the things that I did do well were kind of understanding where there was potential, right? So when I look back at 1995, NASCAR was not so obvious, right? I thought IMG had a lot of potential. And so I think I like to look at things that have potential and then try to invest in management and ideas to help accelerate the growth of those businesses. So I think that's kind of what we're trying to do at Bruin, which is to see things for what they are, but also see things for what they could be, and try and help accelerate, make them know, what they could be. And so there's two questions, and you know, that's kind of the hypothesis. So if you look, reflective of everything we've done, is to see businesses and realize their potential and invest in areas where you can have potential. And then, I guess, obviously, it is personal, right? So when you're the principal person, it is a little different. And so, you know, as much as I really want to be successful, I really don't want to fail. And, you know, I really care about what we're doing. And so, yeah, it is personal because you want to be successful. And on the personal side, but then the idea side is find things you think have great potential to be more than they are, back the management, and help them grow and build things. You know, that's really what we're doing.
One of the other things that kind of stuck with me was I made a note of it at the time when you mentioned on the call was that you're investing in people, not robots. As you just said there, you back the management, you back individuals, you back, you know, people with a vision and strong leadership qualities and a strong idea and a concept and everything like that. Does that essentially inform every time you invest? It's always about the people rather than...
I remember Ted Forstman used to say, you have to have potential, you have to have the right people, and then you get the profits, right? So you have to be in the right categories, I believe, and then I think you have to have the right people leading. And if you don't have both of those, it's difficult, right? And so, and our thing now is to really want to help people grow and build. You know, so yeah, the people are important, because you can't be successful without other people.
And do you feel like you're in all the right categories now? Is this almost complete now? This kind of.
Well, you know, I don't know. I think you're always evolving. You know, there was an old American football coach called Bo Schembechler. He goes, every day you're either getting better or worse, right? So I do think you're always on the go. I'm happy with where we are. You know, if you told me, I started this in January of 2015, and if you told me that we would be where we are right now, 4 years later, I would be very happy. You know, and almost... I don't know if surprised, but I'd be surprised with how well we've done in terms of, you know, when you look at the portfolio of companies, 11 countries, 5 continents, you know, involved with every really major federation in the world, pretty good progress in a short amount of time.
Sure. So obviously you mentioned the people and the ability to kind of scale up or to grow very quickly. That's what you're looking for. But what other common threads are there between your portfolio companies?
I think what we've done, if you look at the things, everything we've done, it's kind of understanding the media landscape and that the media landscape's changing.
Yep.
And how do you take advantage of that change, yep, right? And we're always trying to be at the intersection between the passion of the fan with their sport. So, well, what does that mean? Well, in the case of DeltaTray, you know, direct-to-consumer products, you know, web and app design, OTTs, we're at the forefront of connecting the fan to the passion that they love. On location, we're taking the fan experience of the live events and amplifying, you know, that connection. Engine Shop, you know, does 3,000 live events on behalf of brands every year, connecting the fan. And SoulSight, you know, design in a world of more direct-to-consumer is going to be more valuable than less valuable. So, and then Courtside Ventures, which is, you know, at the absolute tip of the spear in terms of connecting fans with passion. So I think what almost every investment reflects change in consumption of media and in fan interaction with the passion that they like. So that's, if you really look at it, that's a pretty consistent theme. It takes different applications, right? Creative, experiential, media, live experiences. But essentially, that's kind of the hypothesis, right?
And is there another vertical or category that you're kind of looking at the moment?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is we look at so many things. I mean, we really look at a lot of things. and I always try to keep an open mind. I don't know that we sit here and say we've got to have this or we've got to have that. But I think I always in my mind is, you know, does it really have growth potential?
Yeah.
And if we don't believe it has growth potential,
yeah,
we probably don't get involved. And of course, things that have growth potential are the things that are in the middle of the change in the landscape. So it is, it connects, right?
Yeah, for sure. One of the things that speaking to the, your partners at your portfolio companies, they all said the same thing, which is that you can, for one thing, you're a guy that you can get on the phone very quickly, and you're always someone there that they can call upon whenever they need something, obviously. But it's the ability to move quickly. You know, you're not a traditional VC. There's not a load of layers of different things going on in terms of the structure of brewing. You're able to move quickly when you see something. Is that, would you share that kind of?
Yes, I think that's the strength of the as I say to people, for better or worse, it's really me and that CEO. And we have a small team at Bruin, but it's really me and the CEO, and so we're very entrepreneurial, and we can really move quickly and make decisions, which I think for the CEOs of the portfolio company, having talked to them about it, has to be refreshing. Because having been in a chain of command myself, I think the ability to move quick and be decisive is an advantage, and so I think being part of us, all of that, and we'll deploy capital. I mean, if you look at each of the companies, on location, we've deployed a fair amount of capital. If you look at Engine Shop, look, we've been into esports, we've gone into Olympic bid work, we've gone into the Olympics, we went into measurement and analytics. So we're moving. We've moved quickly because I do think speed and being decisive can be a real asset we have.
Sure. Yeah, speaking to Jean-Pierre yesterday, one of the big attractions to working with Bruin was your personal connections, but the extent to which you could help them grow within the US. So is that something that you see, looking ahead, if you were to see an international investment internationally, do you see yourselves as kind of a gateway or a door opener into that US market?
I kid around, right? So I'm 53. If you hang around long enough and you're a good person, survival's underrated and undervalued, right? And so I've been around for a while, I'm kind of a known commodity. And obviously, grew up in America and know a lot of people. I mean, know a lot of people outside America too, right? Obviously, but so I think what we've done with Delta Trade wouldn't be a bad thing to replicate. Meaning, if there's a great non-U.S. company like Delta Trade that wants to come into the U.S., I think we're certainly a really good vehicle for that. And Delta Trade is a good case study of that.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned just now that you obviously worked within a chain of command and things in the past. Obviously, being part of big organizations with various layers of management. Was it very intentional for you, going back to the previous question about your approach and being able to move quickly and being an agile kind of investor? Was it very much your intention to kind of strip back those layers?
Yes, I think I wanted to be pretty entrepreneurial, and I know, having been a CEO, how empowering that is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, if you talk to a leader of a business and you communicate and you analyze things together and you come up with a collective point of view, and then being able to say, okay, go do it, that's great, versus, well, you and I come up with a point of view and then we got to sell it up the chain. There's no chain here. So it's like, hey, we talk about things, and we're here, we're going to have a management meeting for 2 days with Delta Trade. We sit down once a quarter, we review everything, we make decisions, and then off you go. I think it's empowering for the business leaders, but also I think that it's really helpful to the businesses, meaning you can respond quickly. You can respond quickly to opportunities, and you can respond quickly when you have problems, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So what makes a great businessman?
What makes a great business leader? I think you need to have a vision of where you want to take something, and then you have to be able to get there, right? And so, you know, you just can't have a vision, because a vision without execution doesn't work. But someone who knows where they want to go and can execute.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other little thing I always like to say, it's an American saying, I guess. I don't know. You know, baseball, you got to be able to hit the curveballs, right? Yeah. So you're going to get surprised, good and bad.
Yeah.
And your ability to deal with those, to me, is important. And particularly the thing when things don't go well.
Yeah.
You know, look, everybody has problems. So the question is not that there's a problem. The question is, how do you handle the problem, right? And so if you can handle the problem, that's a big part of this too, right? Because I always say, like, a lot of your best moments are moments people don't know about, things that might have happened that never did, right?
Enjoying this Sports Pro podcast? Well, we're also the sports industry leader in print, digital, and events. Head to sportspromedia.com for the latest features, news, and interviews from the business of sport. Help yourself to a subscription to our acclaimed magazine and find out about our unmissable conferences before anyone else. Get inside the industry with Sports Pro.
There's quite a few curveballs flying around at the moment, right? It's pretty disrupted, the landscape, obviously, in media especially, but it's, you know, the political situation on both sides of the Atlantic is another thing, you know, whether it's the NFL or ESPN or, you know, all of these big entities are kind of having to deal with in many ways and kind of work out what their position is and go with it. It's an interesting time. Do you see it as a kind of volatile or uncertain time to be in this kind of business?
Well, I kind of think it's very exciting. My whole life, I won't bore you, but 25 years ago, early 1990s, I worked in a company, different industry, but there was a huge, what I call a channel change.
Yeah.
And I sat there as a young person and said, boy, if I could ever be in the middle of a channel change again, I would love, because there'll be big winners and losers.
Yeah.
And there's a channel change going on right now. I mean, the way content is being distributed is changing, and the way you communicate to consumers is changing. And so there are big opportunities in the middle of that, and really you want to kind of get in that, because the upside is disproportionate. It's not really that a segment's particularly growing, it's just that people are consuming things differently.
Yeah.
And so you really do want to be in that channel change, or, as you're saying, invest in disruption.
Yeah.
You know, technology is changing everything.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that sport would change with the technology.
Yeah.
And so to think that sport over the next 10 years is going to be consumed the same way, it's going to be different than every other part of our life, just isn't true. And so the fact of the matter is, how do you get in the middle of that change? So I think when you look at design, right, it's really important. SoulSlight, you might see us look at some other design opportunities, because how things are designed in a direct-to-consumer world are really important. One of the things I liked about Engine Shop was, they did 3,000 events, but their margins were higher because they were... To run an event, you have to be good at social and digital media, right? And so the key to the event business there was social and digital media. And, of course, Delta Tray is all about, you know, OTTs and direct-to-consumer platforms on all screens. So, and even on location, it's not good enough now just to go to an event. You have to have a good experience at the event, because the media consumption is so great that if you're not having an enhanced experience, you're probably not leaving your home to go to it. So again, you got to really invest in disruption. And then again, the most aggressive example of that is courtside, where we're total disruption, right?
Yeah,
I mean, we're on the cutting edge of that.
Sure. In terms of engine shops, an interesting case study, I suppose, for your approach. I'm interested to know how some of the acquisitions kind of came about. Is that something that you very much drive to say, like, we need to get Terence Burns on board, we need to go into esports and gaming, or is that something that's driven from Brian and his team?
I think it's both, right? And yeah, so even take Brian and his team, I'll do this with everyone. In about a month, so I told him, I said, hey guys, you know, we have a monthly meeting, we kind of go through things, you know, financials and strategy, but I said, okay, let's spend an afternoon in a month. I just want to brainstorm the whole afternoon. And so I think what when you look at EndoShop, it's the focus of, okay, we have this platform, how can we grow it? And so, you know, in the case of esports, they're like, hey, we have this opportunity to make this acquisition. What do you think? We're like, hey, go do it. In the case of Terence Burns, you know, I knew Terence. We had worked together at NASCAR. And Terence was looking for a home. I'm like, boy, this would be great for EndoShop. IG, you know, WPP was, you know, looking for a different spot for that. And so I think it was opportunistic both ways. You know, Brian was looking for a measurement and analytics tool. And that was proprietary to Engine Shop. WPP felt it might be a better place for IEG. So it's a little bit of both, but the result is, hey, that company today looks very different than it did 3 years ago when we bought it. On Location looks very different, and Delta Trade looks very different. And so I think that's, you know, when I look back at things, what I like to do historically, is try to help to operate what you have better, but then create new things. And I think on the other side with the leadership, I think it's fun for them to create new things. I think it re-energizes a management team. So I think it's fun for the managers, and it's fun for us, right? We're on the offense, and that's what this is about. But that's what it's always been about for me. You know, I mean, we're not minding and grinding. You know, we're building. We're on the offense.
Yeah. It's interesting. Everything you're saying is kind of, I suppose, the approach is this kind of marriage of long-term, you know, foresight and long-term strategy with opportunism as well. You know, having that flexibility to be creative and, as you say, that entrepreneurial spirit to move quickly when you need to. You know, it's seeing the bigger picture, right?
So right. And the last part of that is capital. So, right, you, it's not just it's organic and inorganic. So what I think a lot of these businesses have this potential, but they don't have the investment to go behind them. Now you do. So it's kind of like if you're sitting there saying, hey, I've got this business, it's really great, but I've never really been able to invest behind my ideas. Now we're coming and saying, hey, let's be creative, collaborative, and then let's invest. You know, let's invest where the opportunities are.
So where does your inspiration come from? Who have you kind of looked up to throughout your career, perhaps, or who's been a mentor? Where's your inspiration?
It's a good question. I kind of answer it two ways. One, I've had some pretty good guys I work for, right? So, I mean, people forget, but I work for John Portman in Atlanta doing strategic planning. And it was a big company, 25 million square feet of real estate, and it was in the trade show business and had 18 trade shows, ran 55 trade shows in 18 industries. And so and we had a $2 billion debt restructuring. I think we had we have 42 lenders and 132 partners, business partnerships. I learned a lot there. And I learned a lot working for Bill France, and I learned a lot working for Ted Forsman. So I think when you look at me, I apprenticed under some pretty good people, right? Guy I always looked up to myself in business was Roger Penske. I always thought the Penskes were clean-cut, straightforward people, and did things the right way. And so I said, well, who do I look up for? You know, I look up to him a little bit. And I think what we tried to do at Bruin with Allen, when Allen and Company helped me, we were kind of modeling ourselves off of what Peter Chernin did when he left Fox, right? What Peter Chernin's done in entertainment, we're trying to do, you know, in sports.
Sure. And so, how do you define success? Because it comes to the financial element. But how do you define success? Perhaps these things.
I think success is building something great, right? So to me, when I look at On Location, what it was and what it is, you know, I feel pretty good about what we've been able to do. So I think really building something. I think building something that's a lot, to be careful in my words, but building something great, that's how I would define it. And then when you look at, and I liked being a disruptor by heart, right? Something that looks a lot different when you finish than when you started. That you weren't kind of, it's not kind of the same old. You know, a good ice cream shop just doesn't sell vanilla ice cream, right? And so I think when you look at all of the companies we're working with, when you look at them 5 or 10 years down the road, they looked a lot different after we worked with them than before, and that they were successful. That's, to me, how I would define success, and that the people feel good about what they're doing, right? That, you know, it is all about people at the end of the day. You know, I said to people, 50 to 60 for me should be a good ride. So I want the other people. When you acquire a company, you know, they're, Jean Piero, that's his baby. Brian Gordon, that's their baby. George at SoulSight, that's their baby. You really want them to feel like it was a good experience, too. Even the NFL selling that business to us, you know, you want them to feel good. So I want the other guys to feel good about what they did, and I want to look back and say, hey, we really built that into something special.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, building something great, but also building something that lasts, right? Because you want it to, there's a lot of volatility, I suppose.
Yeah, no, well, of course, that's, you know, Deltre's been around for 30 years.
Yeah.
I think all these businesses will be around for a long time. I don't see them not thriving.
Yeah. So you started brewing in January 2015. So coming up on the first 4 years. Have you had your breakfast?
I got plenty of time. No, that's all right. Don't worry about it.
Coming up for 4 years, just kind of reflecting on the journey, I suppose, so far, for want of a better word, and kind of the trajectory that we're on. Obviously, you've been talking about that, but what phase is brewing in now? It's still so young, you know, it's still a young venture, it's an early stage.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've been so busy, I haven't really thought about what stage of the game that we're in. I think it's evolving, and kind of just take it one day at a time. You know, we have a lot of gasoline left in the tank, so we're gonna keep charging pretty hard over time, and continue to be opportunistic, and continue to look for things that we can build and grow with great leaders. The best application of us is to find a great leadership team to back them and to go. That's our best dream scenario. So we have to keep trying to find those. It's hard work, though. You know, it's hard work.
Right, that's it for another Sports Pro podcast. Thank you to George Pine for taking the time to speak to Michael. Thanks to everyone as well who was involved with that Brewing Sports feature. Thanks to you, Michael Long.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back with you next week. Bye-bye.